my friend Congressman Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont, at large, the only one in office since 2007. Okay, let's start with John Boehner. He resigns, obviously under pressure from the conservatives in his delegation. Then all hell breaks loose as they try to figure out who's going to be the Republican leader. And I guess it's an extended question, but what do you think of that? And is this helpful to the Democrats?
Here's their situation. They've got an existential decision that they have to make within their own conference. And it's this. Are they going to continue to appease what I'd call the radical populace, the folks who believe it is acceptable to shut government down or drive America into default if they don't get their way? Speaker Boehner's against that. You know, to his credit, he put the institution first. He knows how harmful that would be. And the latest example of that, hardball politics by that extreme element in the party, was that they were going to shut down government over Planned Parenthood funding. And that was doomed to failure. It would do a lot of damage. It would never get through the Senate. Would never be signed by the president. But the folks who want to do that, they really don't have a plan B, and they think doing it is fine. John Boehner put the country first and made it clear that he put a funding bill that kept the lights on until December. What you're seeing now, where there's no leader and no one emerging as a clear leader, is that the party has to decide whether they're going to tolerate that as a tactic, or are they going to make a decision to work with Democrats who are willing to work with them? That's really the big question. And frankly, I think that has to be resolved before you get into who's going to be the next leader, because the next leader is going to face the same thing that John Boehner faced and the same thing that drove Kevin McCarthy out of the office. And that would be true even if it were Paul Ryan, who's widely respected in their conference.
Now, there's an expectation, as we record this, that Ryan will eventually compromise and say, okay, I'll do it. Yes?
I have no idea, because I think Paul, two things. Number one, he actually, I believe, does not want to do it. He's a policy-oriented person more than the political responsibilities of the speaker's jobs. So he prefers, I think, definitely to be the chair of Ways and Means. But secondly, I think he understands that whoever is the leader, if they face that 40 or 50 folks in the Republican conference who are going to demand that he shut down government, if they don't get their way on any particular issue, it might be repealing Obamacare, it might be Planned Parenthood, he's not going to be in a position to lead. So I think you see him having some reservations based not just on his own preferences as to what job he'd want, but an understanding that the party is just in a bind when it's giving that wing of the party the final veto say over what will and won't get done.
You know, I keep thinking of Slim Pickens in Dr. Strangelove writing the bomb down. Do you remember that, Peter?
I do, yeah. Very well.
And I keep thinking that's what these guys are doing. They start with the Hispanics. They start with the immigrants. They start with the women. I mean, isn't this sort of suicidal?
Well, it's politically very damaging and very dangerous for the party, but dangerous for the country. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans that want to get the job done, and they have a philosophy of low taxes, low spending, and that's a traditional Republican approach. And obviously, there's always a battle over what's the right level of spending and the right level of taxes that goes on between Democrats and Republicans. But the old-style Republicans always had a sense of personal responsibility to build institutions. They knew that institutions were essential to carry on values from one generation to the next. There's a wing of the party right now that basically doesn't think we need government, and they're willing to shut it down. They're willing to blow up the debt, and they think those tactics, even if they wreck the government, that's no big deal. And that's just it's a very strange proposition for somebody who's in government. And right now, because the Republican Party in the House just can't come to terms with a way to operate, you essentially have a legislative body that's not legislating. And that would be like a news organization that you're part of, not reporting the news.
Is there any chance that the Democrats will do better in the next congressional elections because of this? In other words, because they're acting so irresponsibly? Yeah.
The answer is yes, in terms of, I think, a lot of this is going to depend on the presidential race because the congressional races are really affected by how well the top of the ticket does. But I think that this shutdown approach is really wearing thin with the American people, so I think that'll benefit. I think the Republicans could pay a price for that. But the other issue that's really pretty tough is that we've got such gerrymandered districts that a lot of the folks who are embracing these tactics come from districts where the people in that, or at least the primary voters, are okay with it. So, you know, one of the big issues that we always talk about in American politics is causing so much trouble is the huge money. And it is. I mean, we've got to get rid of Citizens United. You know, 158 families have provided half the funding for the presidential candidates, leaving the rest of America on the sidelines.
And how do you do that, Peter? I'm sorry.
Let me just finish on this point, because I think the second issue that is not as visible but is as important is these gerrymandered districts, where if you're Eric Cantor, you're in a district where you can get primary because you're, quote, not conservative enough on immigration. So that's a real problem, and it gives some power to the extreme wing in the Republican Party who've embraced these shutdown tactics.
Yeah, so how do you get rid of Citizens United again?
Well, there's two ways. It's a decision by the Supreme Court, so it can be reversed by the Supreme Court. And one of the big issues that people should have in mind in voting for the next president is who are they going to appoint to the Supreme Court? Will it be somebody who, in all likelihood, is going to be a vote for reversing this disastrous 5-4 decision of Citizens United? The other is a constitutional amendment, and I think as a practical, and I support the constitutional amendment, I'm a sponsor of one, but I think that's up against practical political challenges because of the way the votes lie in the House and in the Senate right now.
Interesting. So with the Republican Party in turmoil, I read an interesting article in the Times which suggested that the voters don't really understand all of that and that it might not help the Democrats. We need a one-minute answer. No more. Thanks.
In fact, people around the country, I think, are dismayed at the dysfunction of Congress. And there's not a lot of analysis about who's responsible. That could change over time. But I wouldn't count on it. And that's why I think the Democrats really have to try to reach out to reasonable Republicans and let them know, look, we're the minority. We want to be a constructive minority. We're prepared to work with you, but you have to be willing to make a commitment to be a governing majority. And that I think, is what America wants to hear, is that we're going to find some common ground rather than just take advantage of political mistakes that one side or the other makes.
There's something called the Hastert Rule, only got half a minute now, which says basically they're not going to bring anything up to vote on unless they have a majority of the majority. What do you make of that?
Well, it's a disaster. And in fact, the Hastert Rule has actually been treated differently, where they are not willing to bring it up unless it can pass with just Republican votes.
Exactly.
That's really, as a practical matter, what they've been doing. So it's the Hastert Rule squared. And it's really a disaster, because here's what it means. Speaker Boehner, if he wants to put a bill on the floor and he can't work with Democrats because of that Hastert Rule approach, then it empowers this 40 or 50 members of the Republican Party who are the most conservative, who've made it clear they're unwilling to compromise. So it really enfeebles the Republican majority from governing. And essentially, the existential decision they have to make is, we're going to throw these guys overboard, we're going to work with reasonable Democrats, and we're going to give ourselves a shot at bipartisan compromise.
And do you see that happening? I mean, do you see that they'll understand the foolhardiness of the Hastert Rule?
There's a growing sense among many of my Republican colleagues that they have to do that. They are as frustrated about this as anybody. They're worried about their party, but a lot of those folks really care about their country. So they know empowering this extreme minority is really bad for them in the long run. The problem many of them face is politically. Sure. In these gerrymandered districts, they're fearful of a primary challenge.
Sure. Well, it's always wonderful to talk to Peter Welch, who teaches us so much, Democrat of Vermont at large, in office since 2007, and a great guy. Thank you, Peter, for being here. When we come back the next time, let's talk about that Volkswagen hearing.
Thank you.